Chapter 35. A Practiced Grin. Oliver missed wind. Bella, the stout, shaggy mare he now rode, wasn't bad, really. She was just slow. Oliver knew this because he kept trying to nudge her forward, but she continued plodding along behind the other horses. Nothing he did could make her go any faster. Oliver wanted to ride like a storm. Instead, he rode like a sturdy log in a placid river. He wiped his brow. The blight was pretty scary, and the others, most of them didn't have horses, walked as if each step was going to bring 1,000 trollocs down on them. The rest of the caravan spoke in hushed voices, and they looked at the hillsides with suspicion. They passed a group of withered trees with sap leaking from open sores in the bark. That sap looked too red, almost like blood. Nearby, one of the caravan drivers stepped up to inspect it. Vines snapped down from the limbs above, vines that looked brown and dead, yet moved like snakes. Before Oliver could scream, the caravan driver was hanging, dead, from the upper branches of the tree. The entire line of people froze in place, horrified. Above, the tree actually pulled the dead man into itself, through a split in the bark, ingesting him. Maybe that sap was blood. Oliver looked on, horrified.
"Steady," Lady Fahil said, a slight tremor in her voice. "I've told you, don't draw close to plants. Don't touch anything."
They moved on, a solemn bunch. Sandeep, riding nearby, muttered to himself,
"That's the 15th one. 15 men dead in a few days. Light, we're never going to survive this."
If only it were trollocs. Oliver couldn't fight trees and insects, who could? But trollocs? Those he'd be able to fight. Oliver had his knife, and he'd learned a few things about using it from Harnan and Silvic. Oliver wasn't that tall, but he figured that would make trollocs underestimate him. He could lunge low and go for their vitals before they knew what was happening. He told himself this to keep his hands from shaking as he kicked Bella, hoping to move up by Lady Fahil. In the distance, he heard a screeching sound, like something dying in a horrible way. Oliver shivered. He'd heard that same sound earlier in the day. Did it sound closer now? Satala gave him a worried glance as he neared the front. The others tried everything they could to keep him from danger. He steeled himself, ignoring that horrid screeching off in the distance. Everyone thought Oliver was fragile, but he wasn't. They hadn't seen what he had growing up. In truth, he didn't like thinking about those times. It seemed as if he'd lived three lives. One before his parents died, one when he'd been alone, and now this one. Anyway, he was used to fighting people bigger than he was. It was the last battle. They kept saying everyone would be needed. Well, why not him? When the trollocs came, the first thing he'd do was climb down off this slow mount. He could stroll faster than this animal could gallop. Well, the Aiel didn't need horses. Oliver hadn't gone to train with them yet, but he would. He had it planned out. He hated all Aiel, but mostly the Shido. And he would need to learn their secrets if he was going to kill them. He'd go among them and demand to be trained. They'd take him in and would treat him poorly, but eventually they'd respect him and let him train with their warriors. There were stories about that. It was how things happened. After he knew their secrets, he'd go to the snakes and foxes and receive answers on how to locate the Shido who had murdered his father. From there, tracking and killing them would be a quest worthy of its own story. "I'll take Noel," he thought. "He's been everywhere. He can be my guide. Noel was dead. Sweat crawled down the side of Oliver's face as he stared at the rocky path ahead. They'd passed more of those terrible trees, and now everyone gave them a wide berth. Beside the path, though, one of the men pointed out a large patch of that killing mud. It looked brown and thick, and Oliver spotted several bones peeking out. This place was horrible. He wished Noel were here. Noel had gone everywhere, seen everything. He'd know how to get them out of this place. But Noel was gone. Ulver had only heard the news recently, filtered through things that the Lady Moiraine had shared about what happened at the Tower of Genji.
Everyone's dying, Ulver thought, eyes still forward. Everyone.
Matt had run off to the Seanchan, told Manas to fight alongside Queen Elaine. One by one, everyone in this group was being eaten by trees, mud, or monsters.
Why did they all leave Ulver alone?
He rubbed at his bracelet. Noel had given it to him shortly before leaving. Woven of rough fibers, it was of a type warriors wore in a faraway land, so Noel had told him. It was the mark of a man who had seen battle and lived.
Noel. Dead.
Would Matt die, too? Ulver felt hot, tired, and very frightened. He nudged Bella forward, and fortunately she obeyed, trotting a little faster up the slope so Ulver moved up the line. They'd abandoned the wagons, then left for some place called the Blasted Lands, which required them to climb some foothills. In the morning, they'd entered a pass between the mountains. Though he felt warm, the air was getting cooler as they climbed. He didn't mind that at all. It still smelled awful, though, like rotting corpses. Their group had started with 50 soldiers and almost half as many wagon drivers and workers. There were also a handful of others like Ulver, Satella, and the half-dozen members of Lady Fael's bodyguard. So far, they'd lost 15 people to hazards of the Blight, including 5 killed by some horrible three-eyed things that had attacked the camp yesterday morning. He'd overheard Lady Fael saying that she considered them lucky to have lost only 15 so far, that it could have been worse. It didn't seem lucky to Ulver. This place was awful, and he wanted to be out of it. The waste wouldn't be as bad as this, would it? Shafail's men and women acted like Aiel. A little bit like Aiel. Maybe they'd done as Ulver wanted to and trained in the waste. He'd have to ask them. He rode on for another half hour or so. Eventually, he coaxed Bella up to the front of the line. Lady Fael's brilliant black mare looked fast. Why couldn't Ulver have been given a horse like that one? Fael had Matt's chest tied to the back of her horse. At first, Ulver had been pleased with that, as he figured Matt would want that tabak pretty badly. Matt always complained about not having good tabak. Then Ulver heard Fael explaining to someone else that the chest had simply been a convenient place to stow some of her things. Had she thrown away the tabak? Matt wouldn't like that. Fael looked at him, and Ulver grinned, giving it as much confidence as he could. It wouldn't do for her to see how scared he was. Most women liked his grin. He'd been practicing it, though he didn't use Matt's grin as a model. Matt's always made him look guilty. You learned grins when you were forced to fend for yourself, and Ulver needed one that made him seem innocent. And he was innocent. Mostly. Fael did not smile back. Ulver figured that she was pretty good to look at, despite that nose. She wasn't very soft, though. Bloody ashes, but she had a glare that could rust good iron. Fael rode between Aravine and Vannin. Though they spoke softly, Ulver could hear what they were saying. He made sure to stare in the other direction so they'd think he wasn't eavesdropping. And he wasn't. He just wanted to be out of the trail dust of the other horses.
Yes, Vannin was whispering. It may not seem it, but we're close to the Blasted Lands. Burn my own mother, I can't believe we're going there. But do you feel the air? It's getting cooler. We haven't seen anything really nasty since those three-eyed things yesterday morning.
We are close, Aravine agreed. Soon we will be near the Dark One, in a land where nothing grows, corrupted or not, where there is no life, not even the nastier things from the Blight.
I suppose that should be a comfort.
Not really, Vannin said, wiping his brow. Because the Shadowspawn up here are more dangerous. If we survive, it will be because there's a bloody war going on. The Shadowspawn are all locked in battle. If we're lucky, the blasted lands, except right around Shale Ghoul, will be as empty as a man's purse after a deal with the bloody sea folk. Pardon my language, m'lady. Ulver squinted at the approaching mountain peak.
That's where the bloody Dark One lives, Ulver thought. And that's probably where Matt is, not Marilor.
Matt talked about staying away from danger, but he always found his way to it anyway. Ulver figured that Matt was just trying to be humble, but was bad at it. Why else would you say you don't want to be a hero, then always bloody end up charging right into danger?
And this pass? Fael asked Vannin. You said there might have been traffic here recently. Wouldn't that indicate that this place is far from as empty as you so colorfully described it?
Vannin grunted.
It does look used.
So someone has been moving wagons through the area,
Aravine said.
I don't know if that is a good sign or a bad one.
I don't think there are any good signs up here, Vannin said. Maybe we should just pick some place nearby and hole up waiting.
He sighed, wiping his brow again, though Ulver didn't see why. It was growing pretty cold. He could tell, even through the course of the day. And there seemed to be fewer plants, too. He was just fine with that. He glanced over his shoulder at the stand of trees that had taken that poor man's life. There didn't seem to be any others like it nearby, particularly not ahead of them along the path.
"We can't afford to wait, Vannin," Fael said. "I intend to get back to Marilor one way or another. The Dragon Reborn will be fighting at Thakandar. That's where we need to go to get out of this forsaken place."
Vannin groaned, but Ulver smiled. He would find his way to Matt and show how dangerous he could be in battle. Then
maybe Matt wouldn't leave him like the others had.
That would be good, as Ulver was going to need Matt's help tracking down those Shido. After all he'd learned training with the band, he was certain nobody would push him around, and nobody would take those he loved from him ever again.
There are accounts in the archives that explain what we saw. Cadswain picked up her cup of tea to warm her hands. The Aiel girl, Avienda, sat on the floor of the tent. What I wouldn't give to have that one in the tower, Cadswain thought. These wise ones, they had fight to them. Real bite, like the best of the women in the White Tower. Cadswain was increasingly convinced that the Shadow for years had been carrying out a complex plan to undermine the White Tower. It went deeper than Swan Sanchez's unfortunate unseating and Elida's reign. It might be decades, centuries, before they understood the extent of the Shadow's planning. However, the sheer number of Black Sisters, hundreds, not the few dozen Cadswain had guessed, shouted of what had happened. For now, Cadswain had to work with what she had. That included these wise ones, poorly trained in using weaves, but never lacking in grit. Useful. Like Sorelia, despite her weakness in the One Power, who sat farther back in the tent, watching. "I have made some inquiries, child," Cadswain said to Avienda. "What this woman does is indeed traveling. However, the only fragments of documents mentioning it date back to the War of Power." Avienda frowned. "I saw no weaves, Cadswain," said I. Cadswain masked a smile at the respectful tone. The Al-Thor boy had put this girl in command, and in truth better her than some others. However, he should have chosen Cadswain, and Avienda likely knew it. "That is because the woman was not weaving the One Power," Cadswain replied. "What else would it be? Do you know why the Dark One was originally freed?" Avienda looked as if remembering something. "Ah, yes. Then they are channeling the Dark One's power?" "It is called the True Power," Cadswain said. "The accounts say that traveling by the True Power works in the way you have seen this woman move. Few saw it happen. The Dark One was miserly with his essence during the War of Power, and only the most favored were granted access. I surmise from this fact that this is most definitely one of the Forsaken. From your description of what she did to poor Serene, I would suspect it is Grendahl. The stories never mentioned Grendahl being so ugly, Cerulea said softly. If you were one of the Forsaken, easily recognized by description, would you not wish to change your appearance to remain unknown? Perhaps, Cerulea said. But then I would not use this true power, as you name it, that would defeat the purpose of my disguise. From what Avienda has told us, Cadswain noted, the woman did not have much of a choice. She had to escape quickly. Cadswain and Cerulea met eyes, and each nodded in agreement. They would hunt this Forsaken, the two of them. I won't have you dying on me now, boy, Cadswain thought, glancing over her shoulder toward where Althor, Nynaeve, and Moiraine continued their work. Every channeler in the camp could feel that pulsing. At least, not until you've done what you need to do. Cadswain had expected the Forsaken to be here. It was why she'd come to this battlefront. Wind shook the tent, chilling Cadswain down deep. This place was awful, even when the battle slowed. The dread that hung here was like that of a funeral for a child. It stifled laughter, killed smiles. The Dark One watched. Light, but it would be good to leave this place. Avienda drank her tea. The woman still looked haunted, although she had obviously lost allies in battle before. I left them to die, she whispered. Faugh, Cadswain said to her. You are not to blame for what one of the Forsaken did, child. You don't understand, Avienda said. We were in a circle and they tried to break free. I felt them, but I didn't know what was happening. I held on to their power, and so they couldn't fight her. I left them helpless. Well, from now on, don't leave those in your circle behind, Cadswain said briskly. You could not have known what would happen. If you suspect this one is nearby, Avienda, Cerulea said, you will send word to Cadswain, me, or Amys. There is no shame in admitting that another is too strong to face alone. We will defeat this woman together and protect the Karakhan. Very well, Avienda said. But you will do the same for me. All of you. She waited. Cadswain reluctantly agreed, as did Cerulea. Fael crouched in a dark tent. The air had grown even colder now that they were close to Thakandar. She ran her thumb along the hilt of her knife, breathing in slowly and evenly, then releasing the breath in the same manner. She stared at the tent flaps, unblinking. She'd placed the horn's chest there, with one corner sticking out into the night. She felt more alone here on the border of the blasted lands, surrounded by supposed allies, than she had in the Shido camp. Two nights ago, she'd been called out of her tent to inspect some odd tracks that had worried the men. They hadn't lost anyone since drawing so close to the blasted lands. That part of the plan was working, but tensions were still high. She'd been gone only a few minutes, but when she returned, the horn's chest in her tent had been moved just slightly. Someone had tried to open it. Light. Fortunately, they hadn't managed to break the lock, and the horn had still been there when she'd looked. The traitor could be anyone. One of the Red Arms, a wagon driver, a member of Cha Fael. Fael had spent the past two nights being extra, even obviously, vigilant with the chest to frustrate the thief. Then tonight she'd complained of a headache and allowed Satala to fix her some tea to help her sleep. She'd brought the tea back to her tent, had not taken a sip, and now crouched, waiting. The chest's corner would be obvious, poking out into the night. Would they try again? As a precaution, she'd removed the horn from the chest and taken it when she went out to answer the call of nature. She'd hidden it there in a cubby of rock, and upon returning, had put Shafail on patrol duty for the night, away from her tent. They had not liked leaving her unguarded, but Fail had made it clear that she was worried about tensions among the men. That would be enough. Light. Let it be enough. Hours passed with Fail crouched in that same position, ready to leap up and call the alarm the moment someone tried to enter her tent. Surely they would try again tonight, when she was supposedly ill. Nothing. Her muscles ached, but she didn't move. The thief could be out there, in the dark, waiting, wondering if this was the right moment to strike, to grab the horn and run off to his or her masters. A scream shattered the night. Fail wavered. A distraction? That scream, she thought, judging the direction. It came from just west of here, near where she'd hidden the horn. Fail cursed, making a snap decision. The chest was empty. If she took the bait and it really was just a distraction, then she would not lose anything. If, on the other hand, the thief had anticipated her. She darted from the tent as others scrambled from bedrolls. Members of Chafail raced through the camp. The yell came again. It was accompanied by a haunting screech, a type that had been following them in the distance. She crashed through some thin, blight-stained weeds. Running through them was a foolish move in a place where a twig could kill, but she was not thinking clearly. She arrived first on the scene, reaching the area where she'd hidden the horn. There stood not only Vannin, but Harnin as well. Vannin clutched the horn of Valir in thick arms, while Harnin fought against some kind of beast with dark fur, shouting and swinging his sword. Vannin looked at Fail and grew as pale as a white cloak's shirt. "Thief!" Fail shouted. "Stop him! He has stolen the horn of Valir!" Vannin cried out, tossing the horn as if it had bitten him, then dashing away. Light, but he could move quickly for one of his bulk. He grabbed Harnin by the shoulder, pulling him to the side as the beast screamed that haunting wail. Other roars came in the distance. Fail skidded to the ground, grabbing the horn and clutching it close. These men were no common thieves. They had not only seen through her plan, but anticipated exactly where she'd hidden the horn. She felt like a farm girl who had just fallen for a townsman's three-cup scam. Those who had come running with her stood stunned, either by the sight of the horn or the monster. The creature screeched. It looked like some kind of bear with too many arms, though it was larger than any bear Fail had seen. She stumbled to her feet. There was no time to look for the thieves as the beast smashed its way into Fail's guards. It ripped the head off a member of Chafail, screeching. Fail shouted, flinging a knife at the thing as Arla hacked at one of its shoulders with her sword. Just then a second beast came lumbering over the rocks, next to Fail. She cursed, leaping away, flinging a knife. She hit it, or at least the thing cried out in what sounded like anger and pain. As Mandavwin rode up on horseback bearing a torch, the light revealed that the horrible things had faces like those of insects, with a multitude of fang-like teeth. Fail's knife protruded from one bulb-like eye.
"Protect the lady!"
Mandavwin yelled, throwing spears to nearby red arms, who rammed them at the first monster, pushing it back from Arla, who scrambled away, bleeding. The woman hadn't lost her sword, though. Fail fell back as Chafail organized around her, then looked down at what she held. The horn of Valir itself, pulled from the sack in which she'd hidden it. She could blow it. No, she thought. It is bound to Coffin. To her it would be just an ordinary horn.
Steady,
Mandavwin said, dancing his warhorse back as one of the beasts lunged at it.
Verdun, London. We need more spears. Go! The things fight like boars. Draw them forward. Impale them.
The tactic worked on one of the monsters, but as Mandavwin yelled, the other one charged at him and grabbed his horse by the neck. The beast brushed aside soldiers who tried to strike, and Mandevwin crashed to the ground, groaning. Still clutching the horn, Fael dashed past where a group of red arms had managed to skewer the other beast. She grabbed a freshly lit torch and threw it at the other monster, lighting the fur on its back. The thing bellowed as fire raced up its spine, the fur burning like dry tinder. It dropped Mandevwin's dead horse, the head ripped nearly free as it thrashed, yelling and howling. "Grab the wounded," Fael ordered. She took a member of the band by the arm. "See to Mandevwin." The man looked down at the horn she held, eyes wide, then shook himself and nodded, calling for two others to help him lift the man. "My lady," Aravine asked, standing near the bushes behind, "what is happening?" "Two red arms tried to steal what I have been carrying," Fael said. "Now we're going to ride away into the night." "But—" "Listen," Fael said, pointing into the darkness. Distantly, a dozen different screeches sounded, responding to the cries of the dying beast. "The screams will draw further horrors, as will the scent of spilled blood. We go. If we can get deeply enough into the blasted lands tonight, we might be safe. Rouse the camp and get the wounded onto horses. Prepare everyone else for a forced quick march. Quickly!" Aravine nodded, scrambling off. Fael spared a glance in the direction Harnan and Vannin had gone. She longed to hunt them down, but tracking them in the night would require them to move slowly, and that would mean death this night. Besides, who knew what resources a pair of dark friends had access to? They would flee. And light. She hoped that she hadn't been deceived more than it seemed. If Vannin had somehow known to prepare a dummy horn, a replica to drop and leave for Fael to rescue as he fled, she'd never know. She'd reach the last battle with a fake horn, and perhaps doom them all. That possibility haunted her as the caravan's members hastily moved into the darkness, hoping in light and luck to escape the dangers of the night.